This is Faith Matters on 89.1, Lubbock's Voice of the Arts. Join us for a conversation about faith in everyday life, the trials, the tribulations, and the triumphs. Discussions about how faith matters to you and our community. Only on 89.1, Lubbock's Voice of the Arts. Support for Faith Matters is brought to you by Covenant Health, where faith meets the future of medicine. Now, here are your hosts, Ryan Price and David Cruz.
Welcome to Faith Matters. Ryan Price with David Cruz, and today we're sitting in the studio with Dr. Ann Epstein, who is board certified in sleep medicine and internal medicine, a practicing physician, but someone who is also I know of as a dear friend through my own congregation's relationship with the synagogue, Congregation Sharif Israel. Dr. Epstein, Ann was previously a president of the congregation there and is someone of depth and substance, and we just simply welcome you as a friend today and to the studio.
Well, thank you, Ryan and David. It is just a delight to be with you and to renew our friendship yet again.
Thank you, Ann. It's I couldn't agree with you more, Ryan. What a privilege to have someone who is so dedicated to the work of healing and bringing about healing for so many people. And yet, Anne has also brings the perspective of doing that from the faith tradition that I know both of us and many of our listeners admire, which helps me introduce a little personal recollection and how much I love the Seder meal during Passover time, and the symbolism that is in the meal itself. It just speaks to me so beautifully. So I thought we'd begin just by asking you to tell us a little bit about the symbols of the Seder, and maybe if you want to expand that into the meaning of Passover, tell our listeners a little bit about the history of it.
Well, Passover is the celebration of the Exodus from Egypt. As you remember, the Jews were enslaved in the land of Egypt for 400 years and were bitterly oppressed. And God rescued us from Egypt after having inflicted 10 plagues on the very unfortunate Egyptian population before the Pharaoh finally allowed them to escape. And as you remember, Pharaoh didn't eventually allow them to escape. He came chasing after them, and God defeated the army by drowning them in the Red Sea. And that was how the Jews escaped from slavery in Egypt and eventually made their way to the Promised Land. So Passover celebrates freedom, and it's called the Festival of Our Freedom.
Beautiful, beautiful. Yes. And why bitter herbs at the Seder meal?
Bitter herbs symbolize the tears that the Israelites shed during their 400 years of slavery. We say that the Egyptian taskmasters embittered their lives, and the bitter herbs remind us of the tears.
And what about the unleavened bread?
The unleavened bread, the matzah, is probably the most famous symbol of Passover. Our legends and rabbis teach us that when the Israelites were thrust out of Egypt, it was on an emergency basis. They had no time to prepare their usual bread. And so the women baked their bread, took the dough from their kneading bowls and baked it on their back in the sun, in the desert sun, as they left Egypt and journeyed into the desert. We figured they just had probably a few hours' notice to pack up and leave. Mm. And the bread reminds us, the bread is unleavened. It doesn't have the yeast in it. So before time to put the yeast in, the provisions were quickly put together and baked on their backs. So essentially forming a tortilla.
Very good.
It's basically a tortilla.
That's something I can relate to.
Yes.
Now, last but not least, the meal always concludes with next year in Jerusalem, with a very exuberant and faithful next year in Jerusalem, kind of an exclamation mark. Why and what does that mean?
For almost 2,000 years, the Jews did not have a homeland in Israel. And ever since the temple fell in the year 70 and the Jews were ousted from the land of Israel, we have been yearning to return. And of course, finally, we did have a state of Israel, and now we can go back. But for these 2,000 years that the Seder has been a custom, we have always yearned to return. Mm. And just as the Passover meal tells us about our celebration of freedom and the yearning for further freedom, the culmination of this was the idea of return to Israel, return to Jerusalem. And now we have that. Now we can go back. And many of us have. I've visited several times myself. Yet still, the powerful message of return in gathering as the culmination of freedom for the people continues to be a resounding theme. Mm. And we continue to say that next year in Jerusalem.
One of the themes I love about Jewish tradition is the sense in which not only do the people long for this freedom, but in the scriptures, when God appears to Moses in the burning bush, it's as if God, too, is yearning and longing for the freedom of God's people. I've heard my people's cry and am come down to set them free. Something at the heart of God that longs for people to be free.
There is a tradition that teaches that God yearns for the people. The people yearn for God, and God yearns for the people. It's a two-way relationship. We need each other. We build on each other. We yearn for each other. We want each other. It's not a one-way relationship. It's not as if God doesn't care or feel. God wants us and wants the relationship. This is a very interesting concept and ties into a number of things. For example, Tikkun Olam, the healing of the world. God wants us, God needs us, God yearns for us in very much the same way we want God, we yearn for God, we need for God. Now, of course, God isn't like us. When I say in the same way, it isn't in the same way. But what I mean is this need for relationship is a two-way street. As you look at it in human endeavors, when we have relationships, they go both ways. Our concept of relationship is with somebody who cherishes us. And God says throughout Torah, you are my treasured people. My am segula, it's the Hebrew, my treasured people, my possession, my portion. And you have a sense of God's desire for the people.
It is amazing, in my mind, the Jewish idea of a God who yearns, longs. It's very different from the Greek idea of God in
God being immutable,
God
almost.
Being immutable, impassible, but rather in the Hebrew scriptures, there's this God who
a feeling
is
God.
Involved. Yeah,
a God who is in relationship. And almost longs and has a longing to be loved and to have this ongoing relationship with humanity. Isn't it awesome, right?
What a gift that I think the Jewish people have given us in this idea of a God who desires this kind of a relationship and is bound up with us. There's an old quote that says, God created the world in 6 days. I think this comes from a rabbi. God created the world in 6 days and has never been the same since. Because somehow it's now bound up in a relationship, and relationships can be difficult.
Yes, this is when one can see through Torah that we seem to be taxing God's patience. And, you know, throughout history, it's clear that if our deity has human characteristics of impatience, irritation, surely we have taxed it to the max.
When we come back, I want to hear more about that idea of God that is in the Hebrew Scriptures. You are listening to Faith Matters on Lubbock's Voice of the Arts 89.1.
This is Faith Matters on 89.1, Lubbock's Voice of the Arts, hosted by Ryan Price and David Cruz, and brought to you by Covenant Health, where faith meets the future of medicine.
Welcome back to Faith Matters on Lubbock's Voice of the Arts, 89.1. Sitting here, Ryan Price with David Cruz, and today we have in the studio Dr. Ann Epstein, who is a friend and a member of Congregation Sharith Israel, and also a practicing physician. We are pleased to have you here with us today, Ann.
Ryan, when we took a little break, or prior to our break, Ann was telling us a little bit about the God of the Hebrew Scriptures and how that God longs to be in relationship with humanity, quite different from our usual concept of God that is a distant God, an immutable God, almost a God that can't relate to humanity because of the gap that exists between us and our idea of God. But you were telling us, Ann, about a more personal God, maybe a God that feels with us and that has a longing to identify with humanity. Would you say some more about that, please?
Well, of course, there are going to be as many different conceptions of God as there are different Jews. So I'm not talking about a Jew, you know, a single monolithic Jewish view. I'm talking about different strands and different ideas as they've developed. But certainly many people have seen Fiddler on the Roof, and they remember Tevye talking to God. And this was a very traditional way to talk to God. You know, God, let's talk about this. You know, things are not necessarily going right. I mean, don't you think you really ought to do something here? And I've got some advice.
I've had that
for
conversation,
you.
In fact.
Yes. Yes, and I think probably a lot of people have and may not have known how to contextualize that, how to recognize that as part of a faith tradition, that one can have this bargaining view of God as in,
and
you know.
Pardon me, you just reminded me of Jacob wrestling
with the
God. With the angel and the notion of even
engaging
the sacred,
God.
Yeah.
Which is the very meaning of the word Israel.
Yes. My favorite story is of Abraham trying to talk God out of destroying the cities of Sodom and Gomorrah. Remember, God's original plan was to wipe out the cities. And this bothered Abraham's notion of justice. And he thought it ought to bother God's notion of justice. And Abraham wound up gradually talking God down to 10 people. If there are 10 righteous people, will you save the town? And God said yes. And so how did Abraham go about convincing God about this? The answer is he applied to God's idea of justice. He thought God was just, and he had a good reason to think so. God had been just so far. And Abraham had the gall to think he understood God. And Abraham was right about that. Part of the Jewish idea is that God is understandable. God gave us laws and principles, justice being a critical one, and God holds himself to those standards. And Abraham thought that God was not holding up his standard of justice that he knew God had. And so his strategy was to point out to God that this was not just. He said, "Shall the judge of all the earth do unjustly?" And God's essential answer was, "Oops."
You see that same thing you were talking about, the Passover and then the Israelites coming into the 40 years of wandering in the wilderness first and then ultimately the Promised Land. But in the wandering in the wilderness, there's this tremendous scene where Moses goes up the mountain and sort of has this conversation with God and says, God seems to want to do away with these people in the Scriptures. And Moses says, don't you know, God, if you do away with them or just let them die, people will say about you, you brought them out here just to die. Your name is writing on this thing.
That was an amazing conversation because, of course, God had spoken all throughout Exodus about what God wanted. God wanted his name recognized in a certain way. God wanted to make sure that the Egyptians as well as the Israelites recognized his power and that he was in relationship with the Israelites and that these were his people. And Moses was absolutely right. If God had wiped the people out, the whole story of the name would have been wiped out. Mm-hmm. Now, we can certainly suspect that God knew all this, and we just had an opportunity for Moses to rise to the occasion. But nevertheless, it once again shows us this idea that God is operating by the same principles that we are. God shows us justice. God tells us what justice is, and God believes it, and God lives by that in the same way that, so God gives us justice that is both divine and human. God gives us understanding and motivation that God believes himself. So we can talk to God. God's way, God, of course, is a much more powerful and mysterious being than we can ever conceive. And yet we know that God has given us his best and that we see what God's principles are. And God is willing to hold himself to those principles that he has given us in his relationship to us. That's why we can talk to God. That's why we can understand God, is that this is not a matter of keeping secrets. We know what God's goals are, and the best of us can talk to God about this.
You're a medical doctor, and one sense in which is that God's desire is for healing and for wellness, and in the Hebrew tradition, sometimes the word shalom, which means peace. In the Western tradition, peace is often means the absence of war, but the Jewish tradition seems to have a more holistic idea of this word shalom and oneness, healing, wholeness. Talk to us about that idea.
Well, there's, especially with regard to the medical tradition, there is probably a difference between the Jewish tradition and some of our other faith traditions, and that is that the Jews never developed this concept of a distinction between mind and body. So we never developed this idea that the body is the source of evil, that our desire ought to be to rid ourselves of the desires of the body and be solely creatures of the mind.
The Platonic idea.
The Platonic idea, the ascetic idea, where a religious the tradition of a religious holy man who tries to exempt himself entirely from the world and remove himself from the world, we never developed that tradition. For us, the idea of body and mind is a complete whole. Jews see the body as a God-given gift, and the body's desires and needs and pleasures as pleasures that God has given us the opportunity for, and we should use them. When we talk sometimes about sin on Yom Kippur, one of the things we talk about is not having taken pleasure.
Yom Kippur, the Day of Atonement.
The Day of Atonement, the day when we talk about different ways we have missed the mark, different ways that we have failed to live up to the potential within us. And one of those potentials that people fail to live up to is the potential for enjoyment and pleasure and fun, as that can be generated from the body's needs. We're supposed to enjoy good food and Passover and good company. We should enjoy wine in moderation. We should enjoy our relationships. So this idea of joy generated from the body's needs and desires helps create this holistic picture. We don't separate them.
A question for you, and maybe you alluded to this before when you said we're not monolithic, and there are a variety of ways that in Judaism we might see a number of these things we're discussing. Would say Orthodox Jews feel the same way about this notion of not separating the mind and the body? Or tell us a little bit about that.
There are a lot of differences in views between the different branches, Reform, Conservative, and Orthodoxy, but this is not an area of particular difference. You'll find this developed even more greatly among the Orthodox, especially in celebrations of joy, such as Simchat Torah, when we dance with the Torah, we celebrate finishing a reading cycle. I have heard that when Orthodox congregations, the dancing and the joy is a sight to behold.
And maybe it's a misconception in my mind, and because sometimes, and maybe just seeing pieces in the news about the Orthodox in Israel particularly, I don't know that I've ever seen one smile. They look somber, and they dress in dark colors, and now you're smiling so that our listeners will know. But is it just the misconception then?
You know, Orthodoxy, especially the Hasidim, this is the ultra-Orthodox, the people who dress in unusual 19th century European costumes. This started as a movement of joy and emotion, which was a counter to what they thought was the overly intellectual Enlightenment movement that was current in 17th century Europe.
And we're going to continue this, and this leads me to another question when we come back. I'd like your take on the Wailing Wall.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
You're listening to Faith Matters on Lubbock's Voice of the Arts, 89.1.
This is Faith Matters on 89.1, Lubbock's Voice of the Arts, hosted by Ryan Price and David Cruz, and brought to you by Covenant Health, where faith meets the future of medicine.
Welcome back to Faith Matters on Lubbock's Voice of the Arts, 89.1. Ryan Price and David Cruz sitting here today with Dr. Ann Epstein, who is a practicing medical doctor here in Lubbock and also one of the leaders of Congregation Sharith Israel and a friend. And we've been sitting here talking really about the power of the Hebrew scriptures and Jewish perspectives on faith. And what a delight this is to have you with us.
I was asking a question before we went on break about how sometimes, at least I have a perception, when I see the Orthodox Jewish believers, they seem very somber to me. And somewhat serious, I said, well, I've never seen even one smile. And I'm sure that they do and laugh and sing and dance and all the other things that Anne was referring to. But sometimes you'll picture them in front of the Wailing Wall, and even the name, the Wailing Wall. It's such a symbol. Could you tell our listeners a little bit about the Wailing Wall and the tradition behind it?
Well, the Wailing Wall is what is left of King Solomon's temple. And of course, it's not the temple itself. It's one of the outer retaining walls. It's the closest structure we have to the temple, and it borders the actual area where the temple was. It's part of the retaining wall. And this is in Jerusalem, in the center of the old city of Jerusalem. And Jews come from all over the world to pray at the Wailing Wall. It is a holy site. In general, Judaism does not have particular holy sites except for this one. We believe in sanctity of place and time, but those places and times are usually locations such as the home or the synagogue. Central areas we venerate are uncommon. This is one of the very few. And so this is the most currently considered the most holy site in Judaism, and Jews come from all over the world. People come for many purposes, and what's probably most famous about it is that people take prayers, roll them up in little pieces of paper, and wedge them into the crevices between these ancient Herodian stones, these big blocks of limestone. There's mortar there, but it also thousands and thousands, maybe millions of little pieces of paper that are stuck into the walls.
I went last year to Israel, to the Western Wall, and men and women enter in sort of separately. And I was there, and to my right was an Orthodox Jew praying next to me on my right, and then on my left, an Israeli soldier. Mm-hmm. Just a very powerful experience to then write the names that I wrote down, my family's names, and to roll that up and to stuff it into the cracks of that wall. And there's a tradition that says it is those prayers that have been rolled up that are said to be retaining the wall and to allow it to stand all these thousands of years, and just a powerful experience for me. And one of the things that I think is so neat about it is the privilege as a Christian to share in that, mm-hmm. to be invited into that holy space.
It's a very holy space. One can't help but go there and be deeply moved. You look up at the stone, you know, look across at the stones, you look up at the stones, touch the stones. There's not a wall. You can touch the stones, and people do. All the time. That's one of the things you do. You get your prayer book, you pray, and you can go up and touch the stones. It's just an open plaza. There's not much of a structure to it.
We've talked about so many wonderful subjects. I think a wonderful place to kind of bring to closure our conversation with Jan is something that is very beautiful to me, because I first read about it through Rabbi Kushner in a couple of his books. He refers to Tikkun Olam, which is repair the world or heal the world. And of course, you do that daily when patients come to see you in need of healing. Would you offer some thoughts around Tikkun Olam?
Tikkun Olam is part of a beautiful tradition that teaches us that the work of creation has not been finished, that the world remains broken and in need of repair. Mm. And the repair is Tikkun Olam, healing the world. And in order to accomplish repair, we need to be in partnership with God. This relates to what I had said about relationship earlier, but this is a productive relationship. We need God to help us work on repair of the world, and God needs us. This is a productive partnership. We work together to repair the world. And by repairing the world, we're talking about healing all those things that makes the world imperfect, broken. We're talking about disease, medical problems, those conditions that shorten human life, that harm the planet. We're talking about tornadoes, plagues, accidents. And very much so, this moves into the whole area of the medical arts. It's not just a suggestion that we heal the world. This is a commandment that we move forward and work on bettering the world for everybody. This isn't something that we expect to do just for Jews. This is the whole world we're talking about. Our sense of what it is that we're here for is to live the life that we think God wants us to live. Is the life of working on repairing the world. This is the good life, the life of being good to each other, of improving the world, improving relationships among humans, improving relationships among countries, improving the physical world, improving the life of people in the whole world and on an individual basis, the individual healing that we do as physicians, that we do in relationships with people, that we do by listening, and that we do in all manners of our life. This is what we should be doing.
I've heard it said sometimes by some theologian somewhere that we cannot without God, but God will not without us. And there's this collaborative thing going on between God and creation.
I can't say I know why God needs us, but I can say that this in some ways is a story and a metaphor. But it works very well, and it explains the critical nature of relationship in making the world a better place. I think all faiths that I've ever seen teach about making the world a better place.
You are describing a very earthy spirituality. I give thanks to God for using your hands and your brain and your mouth to help bring about shalom and the healing of the world. You've been listening to Faith Matters on Lubbock's Voice of the Arts 89.1, and thank you for being with us.
Thank you.